With Kevel and Stepan's help, Brunn studied the structure of the Grand Council seat by seat. Unsurprisingly, Stepan had a file on every member old enough to be seated, similar to the dossier they'd had on her. She felt a constant bubbling amazement at the number of mysteries cleared up. Why this uncle and that great aunt refused to sit at the same table. Why this minor family had bolted to the Consuline Sept 70 years before.
We've made a lot of mistakes. We're a sept, not a collection of mythical saints.
Stepan pushed over another data cube.
Be sure you don't misplace this one. It's our analysis of Consuline Sept.
It was far too much to absorb completely in only a few days. Her brain felt stuffed. But when Stepan began talking strategy with her, she found she had retained more than she'd thought possible.
I will make my own analysis available to you via the desk comm, but necessarily in brief. However, you'll be using your own judgment. Where the younger members are concerned, you may have insights that are better than mine.
I see.
Do you think you also need Kevel Mahoney there? He certainly has valuable experience, though he isn't seated himself. If he sits with you, that makes a statement.
Kevel was a link to her comfortable past, but she was leaping into an unknown future. Still, even on a journey into the unknown, wise people took with them supplies and tools from their past.
Could he sit with you? Would that be too conspicuous?
No, but it would place a limit on the communication, you understand.
Yes, but I don't need him for every little detail. I'd like to be able to ask him for clarification on points of law and order.
That's reasonable. I can certainly ask him as a guest for my own purposes. But, Brunn, that leaves you alone. Your brothers and sisters aren't coming, are they?
No. Cousins might.
Harless's son, yes. I'm going to move to have him unseated on the grounds that his father is a fugitive who's taken up with mutineers. And you will be guarded, Brunn.
Don't keep him out, Stepan. It will look vindictive and weak. Let him come. He has a right to vote, and we have no proof he was involved in his father's activities. Do we?
No, but you've read his dossier, Brunn. We know he acted as messenger from his father to Hobart Consuline on more than one occasion.
Even so, I'd rather have him sitting right there glaring at me than sitting at home brooding about how he was treated unfairly.
I said your insight might be different from mine and yet valuable. All right, I'll withdraw my motion. But be careful. I consider him dangerous.
I don't think he'll do anything violent in the council chamber.
Probably not, but we don't take chances on his mood. Have you heard anything about Cerealis? How are you dealing with that?
There's nothing I can do from here, and here is where I need to be. I hope they didn't go there. I told the people there to get everyone out, dispersed as best they can, and not to worry about the property. Maybe if the mutineers don't have time to settle in, the damage will be minimal.
I know you love the place. It was a paradise for you children.
It was beautiful. Is beautiful. But it is too much for one person or one family.
Brunn nodded at the surprise on Stepan's face.
Look at the situation now, sir. Our people, those who look to us for protection and care, are in danger. And with all our money, with all our political influence, we can't do anything. Should we claim control of something we can't protect? I don't think so.
And to whom would you give that control?
To those who live there. To those who will have to survive our failure.
I didn't get there as often as I liked, but it was a beautiful place, and your mother's hand made it better. Speaking of your mother, do you know where she and Lady Cecilia were going?
I have no idea. By the time I found out, they were already gone, and I haven't heard anything.
Brunn, my dear, I know you loved both your parents dearly, and you've already lost one to violence. Have you considered that they might be lost in this turmoil, Miranda and Cecilia?
Of course. But it doesn't do any good to think about it.
Perhaps not, but to be prepared for bad news, if it comes, that can be important.
What? Have you heard something?
Not directly, no. but I do know something's caused a flurry in defense. I don't know if it's just a space battle somewhere, and that's a terrible thing to say, I'm sorry, or if it could involve your mother. The Consulines have been badgering Fleet to take time to look for her. That's why I thought I should prepare you.
Thank you.
Brunn had thought she was prepared, but now that she let herself really think about it, her face felt stiff, her mouth dry.
Mother dead. Lady Cecilia.
On top of everything else, it was like a vast weight of sand landing on her, squeezing her.
It may not be anything.
Brunn forced her mind back to the practical.
I presume we'll find out. Thanks for the warning.
If there is bad news, and if it is too much for you, let me know at once. We can do something else this council meeting.
Not really. You've already explained the problems and why my speaking will give us the best leverage we have. I'll do it.
Stepan's warning could not entirely prepare her for the news, she found when the message came from Grand Admiral Savanche, the afternoon before the next Grand Council session. She and her mother had never been close until after her father's death. She had always felt reproved by her mother's cool composure. And now, there was no more time. Her mother was dead. Had been dead days or weeks. She couldn't concentrate on the time adjustments. She concentrated as she folded a scarf into the neckline of her suit. She could not cry now. She could not afford to be red-eyed and puffy-faced for this. She watched herself in the mirror, watching the outward signs of inward turmoil fade, until it was almost her mother's serenity that looked back at her.
Was this how Mother did it? Did she hide beneath that serenity, such anguish? Probably.
Brunn probed that reaction, testing her own composure. Could she trust herself to stay this calm under the certain pressures of the council meeting? She let her mind throw up images of her mother, her father, Cerealis. The face in the mirror did not change. The great starry-roofed chamber might have imposed its own serenity on the anthill of scurrying humans below its dome, but familiarity had dulled their responses. Intent on their own concerns, their own worries and ambitions, most of them didn't even glance at the painted stars or the family mottos blazoned around the rim of the dome. Brunn, arriving early, had the time and the inclination to look around. Now, watching the other seated members coming in, she ran over the points she must make.
How will my words affect these people? Most of them so wealthy they have no idea how much they own. Will they shrug and say it has nothing to do with them? What happened 10 or 20 light years away?
The Consulines, bereft of Hobart Consuline, were in as much disarray as the Barraclough's had been when Bunny died. Hobart had systematically destroyed a dozen able Consuline politicians on his own climb to power. Would this consolidate their vote, making them cling harder to any perceived Consuline interest? Or would it open them up, make them more receptive to the interest of the Familius as a whole? She couldn't know for sure. She could only know what Stepan told her of the Barraclough Sept's situation. She watched as her cousin Kel came down the steps and hesitated at the family table. She hoped she was right that Mercy here would not be misplaced, and gave him a steady look as she nodded towards his seat. He looked grumpy, but then he usually did.
I don't know where my father is, so don't ask.
I do.
Where? Did you have him thrown in prison, or what?
He hired a mutineer to take him to Cerealis.
What? No, you're lying.
No, I'm not lying. He really did it. It was quite foolish. It makes us look bad.
Huh?
To the other Septs. To have a thorn buckle, a Barraclough, making deals with mutineers for private business, very bad.
Then why'd Uncle Stepan let me take my seat?
He didn't want to. I insisted. I'm not feuding with you. There's no time for intra-family feuds.
You're different.
Yes. Being a captive, having children, and losing your parents does that to you. Danger, they say, has a wonderful ability to concentrate attention.
Dad never had a chance, did he?
Not really. Not in the long run. Why?
He always said your father was soft underneath, but he got the prestige just because of his smooth manner and his connections. He said that's why he sent Fleet after you. That anyone stupid enough to get picked up like that deserved what she got.
Then I trust he won't be upset when he realizes that we're not going to rescue him from the mutineers.
Kel stared.
Kel, your father's hired some of the most dangerous men in our universe. He's gone off with them alone. Do you think they'll respect his noble birth and take his orders if they don't like them?
But he's rich.
And wealth buys things, yes, Kel. Things. People's loyalty has a higher price, which your father has never learned to pay. He has chosen men who have no respect for riches. Oh, they want riches. But that's different. They respect strength, personal courage, and personal fitness. They will take his riches and, if he's lucky, kill him quickly.
Are you serious? You really think...
I've seen the dossier on the man he hired and some of his crew.
Can't you do something?
Like what? Beg Fleet to go after him? Listen to my speech, Kel, and you'll understand why not.
Kel looked around.
Are any of the others coming? Buttons? Dot?
No. They've registered their proxies.
The Great Chamber was less than two-thirds full. Many members had been unable to return for another session and had registered their proxies with their family representative. Brunn compared the seats taken with her display. Stepan, to her left and two levels higher, smiled and nodded when she glanced his way. She nodded in return. Victor, beside him, pretended to glower. To the right, Ronnie's father among the other Carruthers's, and Ronnie, far older than when she'd seen him last. She pressed her comm control and beeped him. He looked up.
Ronnie, I thought you were stuck on a colony.
I am, but I had to make this session. Did my aunt tell you about the problems in colonial administration?
Some. I'm glad you made it out.
He got out of his seat and came over to crouch beside her.
Listen, Brunn, we didn't even know about your being captured until after you were back. Rafa sends her love. She's my vice governor, so she had to stay. But I'm hearing rumors that you're leading an ageist revolt. Is that so?
Not exactly. Let me explain between sittings, why don't you? Have you heard what Stepan did?
Ronnie gave Kel a suspicious glance.
No, not yet. Tell me later.
Sure. Lunch?
I'm lunching with George and Veronica. You could join us.
I'll try.
Now the ministers filed in to take their places at the table of ministers. Brunn knew that in the wake of Hobart's assassination and the mutiny, his appointee at the Ministry of Defense had resigned in favor of Irian Solinari, who had now returned to the capital. The head of colonial affairs, another consuline appointee, looked worried and glanced several times toward the Carruthers table.
Brunn, there are more young people here today and proxies registered for even more. Be sure you speak to their concerns.
I've just talked to Ronnie Carruthers. He's here in person.
Excellent. I urged his father to ask him back for a council meeting even before Hobart died.
So that was how Ronnie had made it.